It is time now for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings at this time, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger, editor and publisher of the Timberjay newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Morning, Marshall. Thanks for being with us.
We're happy to be here, Heidi.
Well, let's hear about some of the stories you've been covering this week. I know the pandemic probably affects most of these stories we're going to talk about, but especially when it comes to the courts. They've been doing Zoom meetings and all of this stuff, but things have finally changed a little bit back to normal, right?
Yes. In fact, we did start jury trials again in the St. Louis County courts, and those had been suspended since mid-March due to the outbreak of COVID-19. And, you know, it's interesting because the whole situation in the courts has been very complex. And, you know, they've had to operate remotely for the last, 6 months or so almost now. And, you know, it's really been complicated because, you know, I've actually sat in on a couple of these Zoom hearings, and I'll tell you what, they don't always go as smoothly as you might hope. And anybody who's probably sat in a Zoom meeting for a city council or something like that, which I've had to sit through quite a few of those, the technology glitches seem to be just, you know, ever-present, and they make everything take longer. And so that's certainly been the case in the courts, and, you know, it's created a backlog of cases, and of course, for somebody who maybe wants a jury trial, which of course, you know, under the Constitution, we all have a right to trial before our peers, and for those folks, you know, it's been frustrating because they haven't had that opportunity. But now, starting this past week, the St. Louis County courts now do have a single courtroom in each case, in each of the courthouses, that has been modified to allow for jury trials. And they've had to reconfigure things. They actually have put the jury now in the gallery where the public used to be able to sit, and they're going to be separated by, you know, at least 6 feet, and everybody, of course, will be wearing masks. The attorneys will be operating from the jury box. You know, it's going to be different, and then they have plexiglass in certain places where it's difficult to not have close approaches, you know, by people. So, you know, they've definitely had to do a number of things to try to get these courtrooms so they're usable for jury trials, but at least now things are starting. And, you know, and it's been, I think, particularly frustrating for people who have maybe been in custody, you know, who are awaiting trial. And, you know, you can just imagine that if you're wanting your day in court and you're sitting in the county jail and it just keeps getting pushed back and pushed back, you could be pretty frustrated. And I did talk to actually one of the chief public defender up here on the Iron Range, Mark Muhich, and he said, you know, he's had to talk to a number of clients about that. You know, they've been upset, and he said, you know, there's a difference between being inconvenienced and actually having your rights violated. So at this point, he said, you know, they've been inconvenienced for sure, but, you know, certainly the intent is if they want a jury trial, they will get it. And so now they are starting, so hopefully they'll be able to start making some progress on the backlog.
Yeah. You know, I've been in the process of been doing some interviews with judges. There's some contested races in District 9 here, and they were telling me about how sometimes people haven't been fully dressed, or they have their dog, or are smoking and drinking in these Zoom things. But that,
oh yeah,
the positive stuff they said was that people could take a break from their job and do it on a phone, and they weren't having to take a full day off of work. So they were finding they were learning some stuff, but mostly it was making everything a little bit more inconvenient. So,
right.
Let's get an update from you on Monday in Nashwauk. There was the rally for the Minnesota Correctional Facility Togo. What happened there?
Well, they had a big turnout. They had about 400 supporters of the Togo Correction Facility who turned out to support the roughly 60 employees who work there. And obviously that affects a lot of people when you figure the family members and whatnot who are also affected by this. And they did hear from Paul Schnell, who's the commissioner of the Department of Corrections, and he did come up and, you know, face the music, so to speak, I guess, and did talk to folks who attended the rally. And he indicated that, you know, the biggest, the way to solve the problem and to actually keep that facility open would be for the legislature to pass a supplemental funding bill. That's what they've been pushing for months, and the DFL at House has already approved that, and it's been the Senate, which is controlled by the GOP, which has been opposed to that supplemental funding. And so because of that, they're saying that they just don't have enough money to operate both the facility at Togo, which has long been known as Thistledew Camp, and then also another smaller facility as well at Willow River. You know, some folks who attended the hearing or the protest, they and some of the speakers, such as Congressman Pete Stauber, he tried to frame this as like urban versus rural or Iron Range versus metro kind of a fight. And it's really not clear that that's the issue right now. It seems to be more of that divide between the and within the legislature that seems to be causing this this issue right now, and the lack of supplemental funding. So hopefully, you know, some of the legislators, maybe in some of the rural legislators actually who tend to be in control of the Minnesota Senate, hopefully they'll maybe hear some of the concerns that people are expressing here and take some action to get this supplemental funding bill passed so this facility can stay open.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if, since there's so much going on with this, when it comes to like the Senate Republicans and the commissioners, and whether the governor will call another special session. It's just even more complicated than even last week when we talked.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to another COVID-related story, an outbreak you've reported on Net Lake Reservation. Tell us a little bit about what you know.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny. As of like late last week, we thought there were three positive cases on the Boyce Fork Reservation, and that includes both the Lake Vermilion sector as well as Net Lake. And as of Tuesday, that had jumped to six, and as of yesterday, that had increased to nine. So as more testing is done, more and more people are being shown to be positive right now. And I know the tribal chairwoman right now, Kathy Chavers, she is in quarantine, as are a number of other folks on the reservation who have come in contact with people who have tested positive. So it's certainly possible that there will be more positives coming down the line. But, you know, I mean, the Boyce Fork Reservation is a pretty small place. You know, there are not that many people living there. And so to have these kind of numbers is somewhat alarming. And my guess is, just looking at the current trend, we're probably going to be seeing more positives coming out of this. So it's certainly a concern. It's had an impact. I know the wilderness on which is the grill and restaurant at the wilderness golf course, that had to close this week, and also two other off-reservation restaurants on Lake Vermilion also both closed for a period of time, an indefinite period right now, due to positive COVID tests. So it certainly seems as if we're experiencing an outbreak here that's worse than we've had at any point so far in this pandemic.
And a reminder, these numbers may seem small, but a lot of people, testing isn't easy to do right now still for a lot of people, such as if you have no symptoms. And it's just not exactly as small as we would like to hope, I guess.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, there's still lots of people who aren't getting tested.
Right.
They have symptoms, yep.
Yeah. Well, finally, there's a story coming out of Ely having to do with a canoe paddle. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, well, we have actually a 40-year-old man from Ely is facing a third-degree felony assault charge after he allegedly attacked an acquaintance with a canoe paddle last week. And I thought this was sort of the quintessential Ely story. You know, what else? You get in a fight with somebody, you grab the closest thing at hand, and, well, it happens to be a canoe paddle. And it was a bent shaft canoe paddle, you know, at the same time. And those are more expensive. And why he decided to break his canoe paddle on, going after this fellow, I'm not sure. Those are a little bit more expensive, but apparently he didn't care, and he actually broke the paddle by beating another individual with it. The fellow who is charged, though, apparently had indicated to witnesses that the fellow had it coming. So he said he gave him a couple of good lickings. So he is now facing charges under a felony assault charge such as this carries a maximum penalty of 5 years in prison or a $10,000 fine. So we'll see what ultimately happens here. But at a minimum, obviously, he lost the use of a good paddle.
Yeah. And good for him. Trials are resuming in St. Louis County in court. So, that'll maybe happen.
Maybe he'll be able to be tried before a panel of canoeists.
It's Marshall Hellenberger. This has been the Border News Roundup. You can read and see and find out how to subscribe to the Timber Jay at timberjay.com. Marshall, have a great weekend. We'll check in next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Heidi.